Now this is a media event, our media kickoff breakfast, so it's entirely appropriate, we believe, to use this as an opportunity to give our journalism awards. Our first journalism award that we give every year is NBA's Golden Wing Award. And as all of you know, the Golden Wing Award is presented for insightful reporting on the most important issues and trends impacting business aviation. This year's Golden Wing Award is presented to Paul Lau of Aviation International News for his very thorough and well-researched series of articles and on critical aviation user fees. As we've discussed this morning, this is one of the most pressing issues for our industry, and Paul's coverage has helped readers understand what the user fee threat is all about and what it means to them. Please join me in congratulating Paul as this year's recipient of NBAA's Golden Wing Award. Paul?
This won't be long. More than a few years ago, I took a speech 101 class at Penn State and decided at that point I better become a print journalist because I wasn't going to make it as a speaker or a broadcaster. I'd like to thank one of my colleagues, Jeff Berger, who is the editor of our sister publication, Business Jet Traveler, for submitting my name for this prestigious award. I'd also like to thank my colleagues at AIN, the ones that I work with, the ones that I work for giving me a forum to be able to write something like this. Of course, I want to thank NBAA. I know probably half of the people in this room, possibly even more than that, but until something like this happens to you, you don't realize how prestigious it is. So I'd like to thank NBAA. And last but not least, even though he's not here, I would like to thank Jim Holohan, who gave me a chance to get into aviation journalism, a move I haven't regretted yet. Thank you very much. Have a good convention.
The next award is NBA's Platinum Wing Award, which is based on a lifetime of achievement and excellence in journalism. This year, we provided our Platinum Wing Award a little early. This past year, we notified our recipient, Dave Ewald, that he was this year's Platinum Wing Award winner. And we presented the award posthumously to Dave, because as you all know, we lost him. But how could we possibly have anyone who more signifies what the Platinum Wing Award is all about? And in recognition of the appropriateness of the award to the man, NBAA is proud to announce that we are changing the name of the Platinum Wing Award, and it will from now on be known as the David Ewald Platinum Wing Award. We've asked Dave Ewald's family for an appropriate person to accept the award on their behalf. They have asked us to have Gary Warden, Dave's longtime business partner and friend, come and accept the award on his behalf. But let's all give a round of applause to the memory of a man who has meant a great deal to everyone in journalism and everyone in aviation, Dave Ewald.
It's really an honor to have a chance to come up and receive the award for the Ewald family. Jenny, his wife of 58 years, and the children, Daniel, Brian, Spencer, and Corinne, were sorry that they couldn't be here. But they have established, and the family has developed and contributed a substantial fund for this scholarship, along with several other individuals in the room. It's just really an honor to be able to have the family try to contribute to more business aviation journalism. I think most everybody in the room remembers Dave. He was a mentor, a friend, an advisor, and a reference for a lot of us in getting our jobs. And the family would just like to thank NBAA for this honor, and thank you all.
Well, Gary mentioned a scholarship. A scholarship fund has been created for David, and it's a forum where we want to continue to promote journalism, aviation journalism, and so this fund has been created. If those of you who would like to contribute, you can contact Jay Evans on our staff. Those of you who have contributed, we thank you very much. It's our tremendous honor to be able to announce the first couple of awards. The first is to Chad Robert Mum, a senior and majoring in journalism at the University of Georgia. And the second recipient is David K. Wilson, who is a freshman majoring in journalism at Southern Connecticut State University. Now, because both of these students are in school where they're supposed to be, they're not with us today, but we do have Chad's father with us. Ron Mum is here somewhere. They're from the Atlanta area. Ron, are you? There he is over there. Let's give Ron a... We'll give Ron a round of applause for Chad and his fellow scholarship recipient. So that concludes the awards presentation that we have today. We do have some other scholarships that we're providing, and I think those names will be scrolled. While those names are there for you to be able to see, I'd like to ask Pete Bunce to join me on the podium so that we can take any questions that you may have. Any questions? Bill Garvey. Oh.
What's the schedule of activity on the Hill now? What's likely to happen next? And with Marion's departure, is that in our favor as far as this legislation goes?
The taxes that currently fund the system are set to expire on September 30th. And if a continuation is not passed, the taxes would obviously expire. The trust fund balances would be spent down. This is a situation that did take place in 1996, 1997. Some of you will remember the taxes lapsed for a period of 5 years. We're hoping that's not the case this time around. The House of Representatives has passed a 90-day extension that would extend the current law through December 31st. The Senate would need to pass similar legislation in order for us to continue as we are now. If both houses do pass that continuing extension, then that'll give us an opportunity to have 90 days to finish the work in the Senate. As I said before, there are two bills that will need to be married up, passed by the full Senate, Then the House bill, the Senate bill, would go into conference where they would iron out any differences between the two bills, pass it again in both houses, send it to the president, where we would hope the bill would be signed into law and not vetoed. So still a lot of work to do. And that's why I said that despite the fact that we've been at this for a long time, despite the fact that the taxes are set to expire, we still have a lot of work to go. The administration, as you know, led by Marion Blakey, did put forth their proposal for the FAA reauthorization in February. Most parts of that were rejected on Capitol Hill. They've tended to move in different directions, but the administration is still very much at the table, and they will play a role in the future debate.
Bill, I'd just add that the staffs right up on the Hill are tired. Our collective government affairs people were up on the Hill yesterday talking to them. There was a lot of questions last night about AIP dollars. AIP has to be authorized separately versus the tax legislation, so that's still got to find a legislative vehicle to move forward to keep those dollars flowing. The tax committees, as they've sat back, have told us that they're going to probably take a break for a few weeks, which allows mischief to be created by the airlines with their campaign. So that's why the pressure is still considerably on, because there are still several innings of this ball game to go. And we collectively really need to be paying attention to this as we get into the home stretch.
Other questions?
General aviation is not as big in Europe, but what's happening over there? Why aren't the airlines vilifying general aviation in Europe? They're doing modernization as well. And what do you think the airlines' bottom line is on what they want out of modernization?
Well, I may be a little cynical, but I'm not sure their focus is modernization. I think their agenda is straightforward. They want to shift cost and seize control. A lot of us who were around 10 years ago feel like we've seen this movie before. You may remember in 1997, the big airlines, we now call them legacy airlines, called a press conference and announced that their legislative goal for the last reauthorization was to shift $600 million worth of cost onto the low-cost airlines and to seize control of the air traffic system. Fast forward 10 years today, and their agenda is largely the same, except they've doubled the amount of money or tripled the amount of money. I question whether modernization is truly at the heart of this debate for the airlines. If it was, I don't think they would be questioning ADS-B, which everybody agrees is the cornerstone technology of modernization. And I don't think they'd be asking for a tax cut. Most of us have said it is likely that more money will be necessary in the future than we've had in the past. We're not sure of it, but that seems a logical assumption. What we've said is if that's true, then we should have to do our part. We want to do it efficiently. What the airlines have said is it may cost more in the future. We want to pay less than we're paying today. I don't think that's about modernization. In Europe, I think the airlines do have a substantial amount of control that they exercise over the air traffic system over there. They're continuing to try to promote more control throughout the world, and they're continuing to try to say that user fees, which are in place in a lot of places, should be based on something other than aircraft weight. And so they're taking their idea that all airplanes ought to pay the same, whether it's a four-seater or a 400-seater throughout the world. Fortunately, to date, everywhere in the world has rejected that premise.
I think also there's another dynamic going on in Europe. The industry over there faces a common concern with the environmental piece that's really fervent over in that area. And you find a lot of the airlines and the general aviation community starting to work together for solutions there and common approaches as EASA grows. It's very important for us as the manufacturers and the operators to be able to watch what's going on in Europe as SAR starts to develop and where it is in relation to next gen here in the States and where the emission trading scheme is going. It's going to be very important for us. So my hope is that the European aviation community unites just like I hope it does over here, and they show an example and stop this attack that the airlines are putting on us and start to work with us to find solutions and to be able to move in both the environmental front and to move forward over on the modernization side of the house so that we can really have one common system throughout this globe, because aviation really does make the economies of the entire planet work more efficiently, and it's very important that we get this right. But it is absolutely counterproductive to see this battle going on between the airlines and our industry right now. And we're hoping that they do see the light soon and start working with us.
Okay, we've got time for one more.
If I recall, the battle 10 years ago centered largely around the air traffic problem, which was really on the ground, not in the air. And we built a few new airports and a few new hubs popped up, and that problem went away for a little while. Is it possible we need more airports? And the second piece of that is, we all know that the air traffic controllers are severely underpaid and their numbers are diminishing, so how can the costs keep going up?
You're right. In the late 90s, runways were very much part of the debate. In fact, my friend Phil Boyer wrote an article entitled, "It's the Runways, Stupid." The fact is that new runways and new airports provide exponentially more increase in capacity than the technologies. And I think we all recognize that. And I think the track record where we have built runways, such as here in Atlanta, Minneapolis, some other places, we've seen that the delays do go down. They go down at that airport and they go down system-wide. So clearly, to the greatest extent possible, runways provide the greatest capacity growth. I think we also recognize runways aren't necessarily a solution in all parts of the United States. And in those areas, we do need to find ways to try to squeeze efficiencies out of the current technologies or the future technologies. And that's really the hope of ADS-B, where today we may be able to fly 3 mile spacing, but because we're not sure of the preciseness, we're flying 4 and 5 miles apart. Precise spacing may be able to allow us to get some input and maybe even someday reduce some of those separations. But those gains are incremental when compared to the runways. And so I'd like to see us continue to focus on where we can, building new runways and building new airports.
We as an industry are tremendously supportive of the controllers and giving them the tools. I've never talked to anyone in NATCA or any of the associations there that deal with the controllers that has objected to providing the controllers new technology to better do their jobs. And that's what we hope to do as we move more and more of the capability from the ground infrastructure to the air infrastructure, which we as an industry are going to have to pay the lion's share of. It's very important that we work with controllers. As far as the pay is concerned, that's a huge debate. In these bills, that is going to be an issue. And we could have this fight going on for a long time because there is the labor debate going in there. But as far as pay is concerned, when I look at what a pilot is making coming out of an aviation university, I'm concerned just as much about that as any pay that a controller is getting. So it is a very complex issue. But I think it's very important to note that technology that we are putting in the cockpit is going to be able to allow controllers to do their jobs better, and there isn't a single controller that I've talked to that isn't excited about that, and they're with us in that effort.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have to break there. We have got a very exciting opening general session that's going to be starting in just a few minutes. We'll have an opportunity to hear from a cabinet secretary, from a governor, and from a business leader. We think it's going to be an exciting opening general session. We think it's going to be a very exciting annual meeting and convention. I'd like to thank all of you for being here, for the roles you play in the business aviation community. I want to wish you the very best at this 60th annual NBAA convention. Thank you.
Thanks.